everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Soapbox. My name is Mauro DiPasquale. I am the executive director here at WCCA-TV13, the People's Channel. We thank you for joining us. This special edition of Soapbox is in commemoration of Sunshine Week, and the title is Your Right to Know. Now, to learn more about today's special topic, we invite you to visit WCCATV.com/sunshine, or you can also visit www.sunshineweek.org. We thank you again for joining us. This program is offered in conjunction with U.S. Sunshine Week, which runs through March 17th. This event represents a collaborative effort of our participating panelists, who you are about to meet, and is supported by other local media, including In-City Times, Worcester Magazine, and also Power 1310. And we want to give special thanks to Kevin Kassen of Worcester Indie Media for initiating this partnership. The intention of this program is to educate citizens about your right to access public government information and records. Participating panelists will also share their role and their experience in the process of accessing such information. If time allows, we will receive questions from our studio audience. And to quote one of today's panelists, Bill Randall, taxpayers, we are the stockholders of the city, and we need to know what's going on. That is the topic. Without further ado, your right to know. Joining us today in this program, we have Jay Worley. He's the city editor of the Telegram and Gazette. We have Bill Randall, a local citizen blogger. We have Patricia Smith. She's assistant district attorney. Jaime Flores from Vocero Hispano, also well known as a media mogul in the city. We have Mr. Mike Benedetti. He's an employee at WCCA-TV and also a volunteer at Worcester Indie Media. Thank you for joining us, everyone. And thank you to our audience as well. I'm going to welcome Jay Worley to open the program to provide some background about Sunshine Week. Jay, it's all yours.
Thanks, Mauro. Sunshine Week, the initiative started in 2002 by the Florida Society of Newspaper Editors and was immediately adopted by Newspaper Editors and Publishers Association throughout the country. The intent, the aim, was to educate citizens about laws most commonly known as open records and open meetings laws, which provide access to information about how local, state, and federal governments are operating, what they're doing. Obviously, speaking as a newsman, our access to public information is a day-in, day-out concern, but the week is intended to call attention, first of all, not only to our right in the news media to information, but more important, to your right, the public's right, to information about your own government. And although it might seem otherwise, the biggest requester of information through the various acts, Freedom of Information Act, and the biggest requester is you. 6% of those requests come from the media. A large number come from political organizations and political campaigns, special interest groups. But the majority, more than 50%, come from citizens themselves. I think it all boils down, the crux of the matter is, you won't know open government is important until it's important to you. The Federal Freedom of Information Act took effect in January 4th, 1966. It was signed pretty grudgingly at the time by President Lyndon Johnson. It was intended to allow citizens and companies, advocacy groups, and the media access to gain information about the government, based on the belief that a democratic government's records are the people's records. It's been tweaked over the years, including a major revamp in 1996, which created the Electronic Freedom of Information Act to expand the law to computer records. FOIA, FOIA as we call it, doesn't cover all information that the government holds, and by government I mean local, state, and federal. There are 9 exemptions, and covering those exemptions includes such things as privacy and national security. It also doesn't cover the courts or Congress. States, including Massachusetts, have subsequently passed their own open records and open meetings laws. On paper, the law allows the news media and the public to examine records ranging from government budgets to minutes of public meetings to crime reports. It covers the gamut. But at all levels, national, state, and local, these laws, for reasons ranging from inconvenience or simple ignorance of the law, or worse, criminal intent, are circumvented or ignored. And if saw a story in last Sunday's Telegram and Gazette about the catastrophe 20 years ago in Bhopal, India, the chemical explosion at the chemical plant, that led to a federal a law passed by Congress in this country to require all localities, all local governments to implement, to create immediately plans to deal with such catastrophes, similar catastrophes at all sites within their jurisdiction that could be affected. For this Sunday story, collaboration of working journalists, student journalists, and the League of Women Voters went to all municipalities, all jurisdictions covered by this, and requested that information. One-third of those requests were denied. And it's guaranteed, or it's part of the law, it's written into the law, that this information is to be available and updated regularly, annually, as a matter of fact. That's at the federal level. In the local level, state level, we deal, Patricia can address this more specifically, with attempts to circumvent open meetings, open records laws. Now with the advent of the internet and email, we're hearing that a lot of business, and we discover that a lot of business is conducted via email outside the scrutiny of you and I. Now we're told, and we'll get into this later, that a commission, an advisory commission appointed by the city manager is going to conduct its business, its investigation of the homeless situation in Worcester privately, that you're not going to be you and I are not going to be invited. It's one of the most controversial issues in all the neighborhoods in Worcester. In the response to requests for information, even though the laws are there, the guarantees are there, they don't always fill the bill. They don't always work the way they're supposed to. I've got we filed a Freedom of Information Act request for some information regarding local man who's now under investigation by a state grand jury. The information we requested was returned to us, various forms and documents. We got the documents back that contained the information we want, but every specific thing, I don't know if you can see this, everything we wanted was redacted. The specific information we asked for was redacted. We got the forms they were contained in. Technically.
Yeah, can I see that, Jay?
Yeah.
I can hold this up. We can zoom in on this.
Please don't show it.
You don't want to see the name? Oh, okay. So this top name. Oh, I see the name. Okay. But you can see, you can clearly see what's marked off. You can see that on the channel. And I'm getting the high sign from our director, but I want to just inform that we've got plenty of time because the clock says 9 minutes and we have until 11 minutes to get to the next topic. But you mentioned in the history, 50% of citizen base. Now, does it matter what the purpose of the request is?
It has to relate to information that's on hand. If you want meetings of minutes of a public meeting, if you want budget figures, and locally in cases involving criminal investigations, criminal reports. Theoretically, you have access to that. I know we're going to talk later about internal police investigation, but that's been an area of concern.
Thank you, Jay. Jay gave us that background on Sunshine Week, and we have two other speakers that are going to give a little bit of share their experience, and we're going to learn about their role relative to this. And we thought we'd start next with Bill Randall. Bill is a local citizen blogger. He can be read at www.worcesterma.blogspot.com. It's all one word. And Bill, I'm going to turn it over to you. But you know, I noticed from reading your blog that in honor of Sunshine Week, You said that you were going to ask the airport public liaison for copies of two packages of that IMG prepared for the two commercial airlines and copies of all the reports to the DOT on the expenditures for grant for the grant monies. Can you share some of the experiences? How did that work? I mean, well, it's a little bit of a test. The week's not over yet, but...
I never thought I'd be introduced as a citizen blogger. That's my first comment. But I haven't gotten it back from the airport liaison, Phil Nidri. I'm confident he'll send it back. Anytime I ask for information, I do get it back. Usually sure. I have 10 days. I don't have it yet. I know I will get it. Before I get into that, let's talk about some positive things in the city, the way I think it should work. I think the city does a great job with the internet open access to government. If you look at the treasurer's website, the assessor's website, the city clerk's website, or the purchasing department, it's excellent. You go right online, you can look up tons of information. So the city does a very, very good job in a lot of regards. Even on the boards, the planning boards and the zoning board of appeals, you couldn't pay me enough money to be one of those, I mean, any one of those people. They do an incredible job. Twice a month they're at the library, but you can go online and you can look up the agenda for the next meeting, lays it out, tells you everything's going to be on agenda, and if you miss a meeting, you can go online, you can see exactly how it voted, and it's a great resource. Where my frustration is with the city is with the airport commission, where all those good things I just talked about, where you can get all this information, trying to find out about the airport is very, very difficult. And for some reason, a couple of years ago, I was getting very frustrated about the airport and saying that the airport should be a great asset for the city of Worcester, but we all know it's not. So I just started looking up some stuff, and it was virtually impossible to get. You know, you get just the operating agreements with Massport. You say there's a master plan with Jacobs Consult with Lee Fisher. There's all sorts of alphabet soup. So I tried to tie all that information together, and I put together a website. I'm very easy on GoDaddy. Put a website together and very simple, just trying to show everything that what's going on with the airport. To that end, then someone says, what about the airport minutes? So I said, that's a really good idea. So I called the airport and I asked for from January 2005 through July of 2005. I asked for like 7 months worth of minutes. That request was kind of like, well, why do you want them? Not sure if you can give them to you. Eventually, I did get the minutes, and they were on the website. They were excellent. The minutes were just comprehensive. It told you everything that's going on. Airlines at the time, it was very, very informative. And so I thought it tied everything together on the website, kind of the background, what's going on month to month. I also informed them that to send me the minutes every month, I'm going to post them, and I thought it'd be a good thing for the citizens, for us to see it. Hopefully it'd be something just like the zoning board, the planning board, and all those other things. They did start sending them every month, but you notice a big difference after that, in the latter half of 2005 and all through 2006. So I like to take a test. Look at January, February 2005 minutes, 9 pages, 8 pages full of information. And now you look at the minutes last year when they know people are looking at it, and it's like conversations ensued. You read the minutes and it's not what it should be. And that's part of my main frustration is that it's sad. We really should know what's going on. Happened at the city council meeting the other night. I don't think that the board should top secret negotiations with Massport or negotiations with an airline should be in the minutes, but maybe this is a question later on for the DA's office. But that's where I thought they call an executive session. And they put a lot of that stuff in executive session, and for us to see it at a later date. As far as I can tell from the board minutes, they've never called an executive session. So just kind of wrapping it up, if you look at the board minutes, evidently the board members, which I find hard to believe, never ask questions about airlines we're talking about, never ask questions about what's going on with Massport, and I think that's pretty naive, and I only wish that the Airport Commission could run it just as well as the other ones. And the saddest thing is, over the next 3 months, we're going to make a huge decision on the future of our airport. It's a multi-million dollar asset. We're losing a lot of money. And too bad it wasn't being done as well as some of the other things in the city.
Mm-hmm. Is that unique to minutes? Can you get minutes that aren't approved yet?
Well, my understanding was that you should be able to get minutes right away, and they mark it as a draft copy. It's on as a draft. Then next month it gets voted. But It's more so just the minutes, Mara. It's the content of the minutes now. It's just, you can't.
I was told otherwise, by the way, that you can't get them until
I don't know. And I can't believe that they don't ever call an executive session to discuss some stuff that maybe is outside the scope of the regular minutes.
Yeah. Thank you. We're about 30 seconds doing well. We still got 30 seconds over, so that's good. We're going to move on. Joining us also is Patricia Smith. She's Assistant District Attorney. Patricia, we thought you'd give us some background on the role of the DA's office and how you are connected with these issues.
Yes. The District Attorney's office is charged by the Open Meeting Law statute with enforcing the provisions of the Open Meeting Law. It specifically states the District Attorney of the county in which the violation occurred shall enforce the provisions of this section. And basically, the District Attorney's office investigates written complaints of alleged open meeting law violations. We also respond to open meeting law inquiries, telephone inquiries, etc. We also conduct educational seminars throughout the 59 cities and towns within our jurisdiction to educate the public and members of governmental bodies with regard to the open meeting law. Would you like a little background
sure.
of the statute itself and the open
sure.
meeting law itself?
Yeah.
Okay. Basically, the open meeting law statute is contained in General Laws Chapter 39, Sections 23A and B. It was enacted in 1958. The statute underwent substantial revision and took its present form in 1975. There have been a number of amendments to the open meeting law since 1975, but its basic format and provisions have remained basically intact. And as we all know, the legislative intent of the statute is to eliminate much of the secrecy surrounding the deliberations and decisions on which public policy is based, so that governmental officials will conduct business in an open manner, subject to public scrutiny and public debate. And the basic principle of our open meeting law is contained in the very first paragraph of Section 23B, which states that all meetings of a governmental body shall be open to the public, and any person shall be permitted to attend any meeting, except as otherwise provided by the statute. And that paragraph goes on to state, no quorum of a governmental body shall meet in private for the purpose of deciding or deliberating toward a decision, except as provided by this section. However, the statute does recognize that in certain instances, public business would be hampered if all discussions were required to be open. And for that reason, the statute authorizes 9 specific purposes for which a governmental body can meet in executive session, which is closed to the public. The procedure for a board to enter into executive session is specifically set forth in the statute and must be strictly followed. And basically, the board must first convene in an open session. A majority of members must vote to go into executive session by a recorded roll call vote. The presiding officer must state the purpose of the executive session. And also, the presiding officer must state before the executive session whether or not the board will reconvene after the executive session. And then there are 9 specific purposes for which a governmental body can meet in executive session.
So just for clarification, when you talk about, can you define governmental body? Because sometimes there's a, I think we have to know that we also need to discern the difference between, say, the city manager doing something as an administrator compared to the city council. So there is a difference, right?
Yes, and governmental body is defined in the open meeting law. That's at General Laws Chapter 39, Section 23A are the definitions. A governmental body is every board, commission, committee, or subcommittee of any district, city, region, or town, however elected, appointed, or otherwise constituted, and the governing board of a local housing, redevelopment, or similar authority, provided, however, that this definition shall not include a town meeting.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I got a question. Like, so for example, like I go back to the airport board, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So that if the airport commission had a monthly board meeting and they wanted to talk about like negotiations with an airline that they didn't want to think should be part of the monthly meeting, they could call like an executive session and go into an executive session and talk about like a negotiations with an airline? Is that,
right.
Would that be grounds for an executive session?
There are 9 specified purposes for
okay.
an executive session, and exceptions are not to be implied. A governmental body has to fit within one of those 9 specified exceptions.
Okay.
In the case of the airport, is that a governmental body that's running it because it's the city of Worcester?
Commission, right.
Right. in the executive session, when can the public eventually see the minutes from an executive?
Well, the minutes of an executive session can remain secret as long as the purpose for that executive session exists, but no longer under the purpose of the statute. So the governmental bodies periodically review their executive session minutes and determine when they can be released. They should be released when the purpose for that no longer exists.
So, for example, let's just say they were in discussions with an airline, and they went into executive session, and those discussions are over now. They're over. We would be able to see the minutes from the executive session because that purpose would be over, I guess.
Again, it's within the discretion of the governmental body as to when that purpose is over. If there's some purpose that exists, continues to exist, it, you know, is generally within the discretion of the board.
Right. And we have just about 10 seconds left of this section, so I want to move on. But also that means we have a right to ask when they're going to... Do we have a right to ask when they're going to decide it's available? Do we...
You have a right to monitor it. Generally, the boards periodically review their executive session minutes and determine if they can now be publicly released.
Mm-hmm. Is there a checks and balance to that? Is there a point where you can say, okay, that's enough, we need to know?
There's no specific time period involved with that.
Okay. We're going to move on. Thank you, Patricia. We're going to move on to the three topics. And this is fun, isn't it? This is cool. What are your rights to know? This is the discussion, sort of an at-large question we want to throw out and offer to the panel. And we're going to have Jaime start this section off. And Jaime could talk for, you know, about 3 minutes, and then the remaining time of this section, which will be about 8 to 10 minutes or so, we can all discuss this in a panel form. So, Jaime, you're from Vocero Hispano. You're involved with media, WCCA for years and years. You're on the radio, WCUW. Now you have a new show on TV3. Can you share some of your... You're very involved with the Latino community, too. Can you share some of your perspective on this? What do you see that we as citizens have a right to with regards to access to government records, business meetings? Do you have any experience to open this?
Well, yeah. I mean, to begin with, it's in the Constitution. So you take it from there. But, you know, going back to my colleague on the telegram that they're going through now a few years ago with the police request, for those that have been around for a while, in the 1970s, the Latino community had a complaint against the police for alleged police brutality. And so we went to City Hall because at that time we really didn't know how to approach how the process was. So the city said, well, the Human Rights Commission should tackle this issue. So they did. So they requested those records from the police department. And, well, you guessed the answer. It was no. So it went back. So we said, well, what do you mean, no? So we took them in court again. And the court says, yeah, the police have to release the records. So what happened? They released the records exactly like those. They cross the information that they didn't ask want to that we know. So we had to go back in court. I mean, to make long story short, it took us like 4 years, 5 years for this case. And the question was, you know, who's paying for all of this? How much money are you wasting? And bottom line is the taxpayer money for something that should be done in the first place with no question asked. The right to know, in this case specifically, for the Latino community, it can be confused sometimes for many reasons. Number one, the language barrier. Number two, the lack of knowledge. And number three, it had happened, I don't know, I'm not aware that had happened around here, but in other sections of the country, people that ask for these documents or request some of this type of information have been intimidated. Have been followed by the cops, have been stopping, has been asked, well, what is that you asking this? And now, I guess, nowadays, we live in we have a different ball game due to the umbrella of national security, and after 9/11, things have changed 360 degrees. It's like, well, you're a terrorist, I'm wondering if tomorrow you're gonna request one of these documents and they're gonna ask you for proof of citizenship. So many things that had happened. In my personal view, some of these, the Freedom of Information Act, some of those things had to be change or modify somehow, because the way that they are, they're just not working, period.
So, thank you, Jaime, for that. So just to clarify now, part of the purpose of this program is to make sure the viewers of this understand that this is not just a media issue, it's a citizen issue. You have a right to know, you have a right to access on this. Do you need to be a journalist to call City Hall up or to call any government body up just to get information? And I'm just tossing that out as a question, and I'm going to let all of you just chime in on anything that you need to relative to this issue.
No, you don't. But you need to know how to play the game. You know where to go, what to do, how to approach it, what is the process. Because if you don't, you get lost in the shuffle, period. And you ain't going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if you do, and you do it as a single individual, you better have some money. Because it's going to cost you. They're going to drag the case, as I say. And then $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 that you're going to have to, get out of your pocket. And you finally say, you know what? Hell with it. You throw a towel.
I think that happens in a lot of cases. So, the way you mentioned is retribution that you're going to be afraid of. There's this intimidation factor. And now with the laws, there's even more reason maybe to be intimidated, especially if you're an immigrant. You've got to consider whether or not they're going to jeopardize your whole standing. Jay, can you offer any background on that as far as that access? He said you've got to learn to play the game. What are the steps? Do you guys know anything special that we need to know as citizens, like who to call? What are the steps that we need to take?
I think going into whatever agency, whatever government unit you're seeking information from, know ahead of time what your rights are. My advice, personal experience, is not to try to do it over the telephone. There are any number of ways to inconvenience you or to delay that. It involves going in person and asking for this set of documents. Then you need to know what you're seeking, and preferably where it's housed and in what city agency, what department, and deal with them. From there, be prepared to, upon being shuffled around or delayed, be prepared to say or to file a Freedom of Information Act request. And it's a very simple process, the details of which were there. I think you've set up an online thing. We can click into the Sunday story we had. There's detail there on how to compile your own FOIA. It's just a matter of moral of being prepared, of knowing exactly what you want. If you go in and asking for, I want all the things that pertain to the airport in the last 5 years, understandably, it's going to be, it's going to take some time, pal. Yeah. But specifically, I want information about airlines that have expressed interest in landing there using that facility. If you, by narrowing it down, by making it a more reasonable request, you've got a better access. And then being willing to take that step to challenge any refusal you get.
I think I find it very easy to get information, to be honest with you. I don't know about the Freedom of Information Act. Again, the city has a ton of information right on the internet. Mm-hmm. The city clerk does a great job. So you go into archives of city council minutes, and you go to the airport section and open the attachments and read them. And even on the city website, there's tons of information. My problem has been that there is no information. There is nothing. You could do a Freedom of Information request. You could ask. And there's nothing there. I mean, it's just that's the problem, that the minutes aren't being kept the way they should be. That's so, it's just the bad information. That's been my main thing. And then there should be executive. And again, if they're going to claim that this top secret negotiating, go into an executive session and document in the minutes and say, we went in executive session for a half hour. Mm-hmm. But, it doesn't happen. It's just like, I think they get together and we don't know what they talked about. I mean, they talk about a Bose company coming in doing a photo shoot. And it's like, well, that's...
Do you physically attend the meetings?
You know what? I went one time and I was kind of uncomfortable. And it wasn't like, it's not the same as maybe when you ask for records from a police department. You're worried about maybe the police department following you around. I'm not worried about any from the airport commission following me around. But... I wasn't welcome there, and I knew I wasn't welcome there, so I was like, I don't need this, and I shouldn't have to. I should be able to just go online. Like I say, if I miss a planning board or a zoning board of appeals meeting, I go right online, I know exactly what happened. I say, if you haven't done it, I mean, you really should look at the minutes of those. They're excellent. But, you know, if I was there, I don't think I would have, there'd be any. I get the impression that there might not be. I should go, though.
I wonder, Bill, the session you did go to, did you then check the minutes, and did they correspond to what you actually saw?
I really don't remember, to be honest with you. I don't think it was before. That's a good point. I didn't do it.
This feeling of, you know, not being satisfied with the information or fear of retribution, this is not necessarily unique to the city of Worcester.
No,
I don't know if anyone's had experience in other cities.
I think the airport, though, in the city of Worcester really is like the third rail of politics for some reason. It really is, you know, my impression.
What do you feel is the basic reason for them to say, okay, you know, here comes this guy, he's a pain, he's going to ask for stuff. You feel like you're not welcome, you're intimidated. What is behind all that? I mean, it's just government. People do want to, it's not like, none of us are that important. It's what we do that's important, and it's...
I think it's some egos, to be honest with you. There's a lot of egos, I think.
I don't know, you know.
You've got to check your ego at the door, and, you know, just, again, for the 100th time, you watch the Zoning Board of Appeals, Planning Board, they do a great job, and... Why they do a great job, and they, you know, I don't. But I think it goes down to a lot of it goes down to egos, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you're on the board to, like, you know, do the right. Egos.
I should probably say to viewers watching this, because I'm sure, you know, the city is going to watch this, city administrators are going to watch this, and whatnot. And it's not an intent to be attacking anybody.
No.
You know, you have your citizens are expressing some frustrations, and also just to get that point of information out to everybody. So we just need people to learn about this. We've got another minute left. Go ahead, Mike.
I wonder if I can chime in too on this. You know, and Worcester Indy Media, none of us are professional journalists. We're all volunteers. And usually when we do an information request, which we do pretty often, we get back what we want. Sometimes we get the runaround. And I used to have this impression that maybe the city was giving us the runaround because they thought we were just a bunch of bozos. But talking to Jay about this, the TNG gets the runaround sometimes too.
Yeah.
And that said, I mean, I think that we all focus on where we have a problem making an information request. We've gotten a lot of information too with really no problem. So I would totally encourage anybody to make an information request. I mean, I think the chances are really good that you're going to get the information without any hassles.
I tried to make the point when I first started talking about Sunshine Week that it's not always scapegoating or trying to hide information, some ulterior motive that's bad. And very often it's just a matter of inconvenience. A clerk responsible for that job also has a dozen other things to do, and
right.
We as a lowly citizen walks in on, you know, that sort of response.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you take the approach of a journalist. I need this.
Sure.
This is my right. And again, be prepared to take that following step and challenge.
Sure.
And go to the Freedom of Information Act.
I know we experienced similar with the Earned Income Tax Credit group. You know, we set up places all over the city for people to do the test. They want to come in. They want to do it now. I want it now. And it's like, okay, we only have like two interns trying to help you with your taxes here. There's a line of 30 people. So you're right, Jay. Sometimes it is that. It's just that they're asking overwhelmed a lot of times. Any final comments before we go to the next topic?
I just would like to have what you say. I mean, this is hopefully is taken as a positive comments, as a something that it has to be improved. There's nothing negative about, because bottom line is whoever is in power tomorrow is like me or like you, and tomorrow that person might be down here. You need to know your rights. You never know when the whole enchilada turn around and then you're facing on the other side of the fence. It's for everybody to know your right to know and how to go about it. I mean, it's simple. An honest, open government is healthy. When you start hiding things under the sheets, something is fishy for whatever reason. And because we have the right to know, then we should pursue it.
Now, just for the sake, before we go to the next topic, very quickly, before we... For those persons who do not have access to links on the internet and stuff, you mentioned the Request for Freedom of Information Act. If you happen to go into a government agency, government body, and you ask for something and you're not happy, and you say, you know, I'm going to file a Freedom of Information Act, where do you go? Who do you get that from?
It's a very simple form that I'll provide the information to anyone that wants to use it.
Okay.
You can make it yourself, and it just explains what you're looking for, the date, time, that sort of thing, your name, the agency you're dealing with. It's a fairly simple procedure.
So it's a letter?
Yeah, it's a letter.
Just a letter, and it goes to the agency you're requesting from?
Directly to.
Okay. And that's your record is claiming to that right? Okay. Next, we thought we'd explore, in the context of Sunshine Week, the city manager's Worcester's homelessness task force. This has been recently, seems to be gaining as an important issue. It's been raised a number of times in local media outlets. Let's just open it up. Jay, why has this gained so much attention, and why is this such an important issue to discuss?
Well, until the recent budget problems came to light in the city, I don't think there's any more divisive issue in this city than, I mean, it's not the issue of homelessness, it's what do we do with homeless people, or how do we shelter them. And as everyone is aware, the various neighborhoods of Worcester, some more than others, have objected in ways that have been very vocal of their opposition to that. At the same time, the largest facility in town, the PIP shelter on Main Street, has for a long time has presented something of a problem for residents of the Main South area of that area, and understandably have a right to seek the dispersal of those clients. Social service agencies have tried to locate facilities, and my neighborhood, Newton Square, it's met with a similar program for women with sobriety problems. Fought bitterly. I mean, it's extremely divisive. The city manager a year ago said, "I'm going to appoint a citizen commission to advise me on that." He said he would announce that commission shortly. He just did a year later. And I'm not casting blame there. It just took a long time, I guess. And then with that, he announced that because it's advisory, that these sessions will be closed. And the city solicitor, David Moore, provided an opinion citing a case involving school personnel or some school committee that they don't have to, it was advisory in nature, and therefore they don't have to be open. Well, here you've got this issue, and some say a panel of commissioners that have weighted more heavily in favor of the social service agencies and the attempts to disperse this population and provide housing. So you've already got grounds for people to be,
sure,
the opponents to be upset. And for whatever your thinking is on the issue, I think you have a right to know, mm-hmm, and want to be involved in that process as they gather information.
Now, maybe Patricia can give us some light on this. Now, in the comment that the solicitor filed, he cited a school situation, which would be a government body, correct?
Yes.
And but this, now, how is that
keep
different
in mind
from
it is advisory precedent is there to,
okay,
exclude.
Basically, I'd like to tell you about the specific case that is at issue, which is Connolly versus School Committee of Hanover. This is a 1991 Supreme Judicial case from the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts, which held that a high school principal selection committee, which a town superintendent of schools appointed to assist him in nominating candidates for the position of high school principal, was not a governmental body within the meaning of the open meeting law, where it was not constituted or regulated by statute or bylaw, and where it was informally appointed to assist the superintendent in carrying out a task that the legislature permitted him to perform in his sole discretion, free from scrutiny under the open meeting law. And there are just some provisions of this specific case, which I have here with me today, that shed a little bit of light on this. The open meeting law applies only to governmental bodies. The legislature has defined governmental body, as we stated before, as every board, commission, committee, or subcommittee of any district, city, region, or town, however elected, appointed, or otherwise constituted. With regard to this definition, the case states the key inquiry in this case is whether the selection committee is a committee of the town, in this case of Hanover. And for these reasons, the Supreme Judicial Court concluded that it was not. First, the selection committee in that case was not created pursuant to any statute or bylaw. It was appointed informally by the superintendent. It says this factor alone sets the selection committee apart from other entities considered to be governmental bodies under the open meeting law, almost all of which are creatures of statute, ordinance, or bylaw. The case also states of special significance is the fact that the superintendent, because he is clearly not a governmental body, could by himself have accomplished this task entirely free from the requirements of the open meeting law. It was his independent and exclusive statutory responsibility, and the selection committee was established merely to assist him in carrying out his responsibility. So these are some of the provisions of the Connolly case which have been discussed with regard to this matter.
Mm-hmm. Like one task force comment.
Sure.
I don't know if it applies to Sunshine Week or the open meeting laws, but I was on a task force for the pilot, and that's maybe, again, maybe it's out of context, but we did, 2-3 years ago, we came up with these great recommendations, and helped a university partnership was formed, and someone was hired. And I don't know where, but I don't know exactly. I'm concerned with the task force that they're going to probably do another pilot task force. I wish that, like, in that example, we reconvened the task force that we had, because we had some great recommendations that never got implemented. I was like, I really wish that we reconvened the task force, roll out the recommendations we came up with, and see, you know, what we have done, what we haven't. We didn't do very few of the recommendations. And my only thing is when I think of the homeless task force, it's like, I feel like we've done this before. You know, it's again, I don't know if this is so much like, what can we sure. reconvene what we did before, and but again, it has nothing to do with Sunshine.
It's all been done before. I looked at a McGovern speech when he ran for president, McGovern. It was you could play it again to, you know, right. Next election if everything applies.
This pilot task force was two and a half years. It was excellent. It's like just we should reconvene the task force and look at our recommendations.
It seems we might need to start asking our legislators to redefine governmental body to be a little more broader, perhaps. And, now, I have a quick question before, because I know Jay wants to say something.
No. Oh, no.
I can tell you're like winding up.
No.
But did the city set itself a bad precedent by allowing city employees to participate on boards and commissions? Because now you see, it seems to be more of a government body infiltrating on these boards and commissions. Is that gonna cause some problems in the future? I mean,
I think it's a great idea, to be honest. I think there's, city employees, obviously, I don't think, I'm trying to think, there might be some conflicts, I don't know, like maybe a parks employee shouldn't be on a parks commission, but I think it's, we want people to, I just don't see how that could possibly be a bad thing. A city employee can, I can't imagine it could be a bad thing.
And in the citing that you mentioned, Patricia, it was about the superintendent. Now, he would be considered, is he a government?
No,
because he's appointed
body.
And he's not
this
necessarily.
The superintendent is not a governmental body, and he appointed this particular committee to assist him within duties that were in his discretion.
Right. I think even the airport commission should let one member be outside the city or be on the board. It is a regional airport. Yeah. I don't live in a city, that's why.
Jaime, Mike, go Jaime, then Mike.
I just briefly want to say that regarding the homelessness situation, in my other life at social work in, for many years dealing with them, and it's a political issue. And actually I think that City Hall or the city administration, by not closing the place, is doing themselves a favor, because although it's a lot of pressure left and right to close the place and throw away all this trash, as these people is called, the cost will be just out of reach as far as emergency rooms and everything else if these people doesn't have a place to go. Now, why is that they don't have a place to go? Because we don't have. Let me go back. We have a new committee, the task on homelessness, but whatever you want to call it. I've seen many of those come and go with the same ideas. 2-3 years, in 5 years we're going to finish with the homeless situation in this city. I've been hearing that for easily 15 years. And what had happened? Nothing. We're still playing the same record. What really bugs the hell out of me is that we're still putting in these boards and these commissions the same more or less people that have been in the previous commissions. I mean, they know instead of being a part of the solution, they are still part of the problem. So I don't see them, you know, I don't see these committees going nowhere as long as there's a real commitment from the city that we're going to do something regarding this. And the only solution to this is to establish affordable housing for these individuals, provide programs that includes mental health, substance abuse, and you name it. That's the only way. Otherwise, whatever they say in my book is bull.
We're actually running over on this time, but I'll give you some 30 seconds. I just want to say I hope there's some homeless people, including in those commissions, because they're
I wanted to just point out one reason why the city might want to keep, might want transparency, might want to open up some of these meetings, whether or not they do, is because I think that what you sometimes see is, let's say you have a town planning board has been meeting, they're kind of trying to keep the public out of what's going on, then they announce some big decision, and then at the next meeting of the planning board, there's 100 angry people, they're all making speeches, there's people picketing outside. This is like the worst use of the time of the planning board. It's not a very efficient use of the time of the people who have concerns either. It's much better to keep people included the whole way. I think we've seen this with the funding of WCCA, that nobody has any idea what's going on with the funding of WCCA, and then at the Public Safety and Transportation Committee subcommittee hearing, you suddenly got 150 people who are angry, who are anxious, who are making long speeches, and the subcommittee members are just sort of sitting there like, what are we supposed to do? And everybody who's there with concerns, they're not really getting their concerns answered. And that maybe I'm worried something like this is going to happen with the homeless commission.
Sure.
They're going to announce their recommendations, and the next meeting, public meeting about this, there's going to be 200 people, there's going to be people picketing, whatever their recommendation.
Just hope somebody doesn't die while waiting. We're going to move on to the next issue. With the topic is public records. In particular, there's been a big story lately about that has come and gone in bits and pieces here. With the Telegram and Gazette, their fight to obtain complaint records against the police. Can you share some, Jake, can you share some highlights on this? Is there a success story in this for open government or not? And, we know it's not unique to Worcester, but go ahead. Or maybe it is. I don't know.
That's all news, Mom. Success, I mean, that's a loaded term. 1999, reporter for the TNG, John Monahan, got wind of a complaint by a Worcester resident. His name was Sean Wilder. He and a friend were downtown walking, I think coming back from a bar, as I recall. They matched us. Supposedly matched the description of two suspects in a criminal case. They were approached by the first officers on the scene, thrown to the ground. The one young man, Wilder, had just recovered from a severe neck injury and was injured even more seriously with this. His account to Monahan prompted a look by our paper into the situation, and from there a three-year legal battle that first resulted in the first step was a decision. We requested the internal affairs investigation report on that arrest and what happened. We were refused. We went to the city solicitor, still then and now, David Moore. We were pending was issued that internal affairs records are private. We went to district court, superior court here. The city side was upheld. We appealed to the appellate court and finally won. That was challenged by the city and ultimately went to the SJC. And in 2003, 3.5 years later, our right to that information was given, and we finally got the reports we were looking for. One story that essentially corroborated what John Wilder had to say, that pointed out some embarrassing details to the police department, but not necessarily criminal. Not worth the tens of thousands of dollars that it cost us, the aggravation, the whatever I mean, it was a long battle and caused animosity with this, between the newspaper and the city, and most specifically the police department, affecting in some ways our ability to cover what was happening. It's done with now. I mean, as I said, that story was finally written. I mean, there were countless stories written about the legal battle, but the one story we were after, and what could have been written 3.5 years ago if people had just opened up, was finally in the summer of 2003. Did we win? It's hard for us to get internal affairs reports now.
It's harder.
It's difficult, yes.
Now, you mentioned the cost of T&G. Is it also a cost for the city to hold that back? Because they're having a tough time right now. Wouldn't it be easier and cheaper just to say, here it is? I mean, it must cost some.
As this one turned out, it would have been a hell of a lot cheaper for them.
yes.
You've got utilizing the services of your existing city solicitor's office. I really can't remember whether they retained private counsel for it or not. But it took a lot of manpower and time on their part. It cost them something. And it was wasted money.
Is there any kind of recourse? I don't know, Patricia, if you can chime in with that. I mean, it's harder now to get information. It's just as hard for them to get information. It could be anything. The indie media folks have had similar situations. And Mike, we're going to have you. But is there any recourse to that? I mean, is there anything we can do as citizens or?
That's something I would defer to the Secretary of State's office, the Supervisor of Public Records, would be the appropriate agency and division to handle that question.
Okay, very good. Mike, did you want to share some of the experience?
Yeah, I can talk. I mean, we have an outstanding public records request right now out of Worcester Indy Media that comes exactly out of that Supreme Judicial Court case. So within the past year in Worcester, there's been some concern with police behavior. I mean, I think it's really just a couple of bad apples. But you had one policeman who was like publicly, lewdly exposing himself or obscenely exposing himself to employees at Honey Farms. You had one officer who was arrested for dealing drugs. And so there's a little concern about what the heck is going on in the Worcester Police Department right now. And so knowing that the Supreme Judicial Court had said that at least some of these citizen complaint records are public information, and knowing that the Worcester Police Department has announced that they've moved that all over to a digital database, we said, okay, let's file a records request and find out what we can find out. What will they tell us? So we sent them a records request, and we said, you know, we're not lawyers. We know that the Supreme Judicial Court has said that some of this stuff we can have, some of it we can't. Send us whatever you can send us. Send us whatever you think, you know. We didn't set any particular bar. Just send us something. Send us something from these records. And they wrote back saying, we can't send you anything. Which, again, as non-lawyers, seemed like completely at odds with what the Supreme Judicial Court had said. So the recourse that we then took is we went to the Secretary of the Commonwealth and we said, we kind of feel like we're being stonewalled here. And he has since appointed an attorney to look into this situation, and we're just kind of waiting to find out what's going on. So that's where we are right now.
And I think, you know, when you think about it, I mean, you know, it's an institution like the Telegram, the Worcester Telegram, people with money. Well, finance, yeah, faces, you know.
Not the paper I know.
And against the police department, another institution with a lot of money. Now imagine yourself or I as a single individual trying to tackle something like this. Just right there, you say, man, where am I going to go with this if you don't have any money? It's a matter of money, really.
Right away, you would have gone to 3 years, 3.5 years with it. As an individual,
And I think that if the attorney appointed by the Secretary of the Commonwealth doesn't get anywhere for Indy Media, we don't have any money as an organization. I don't know what we would do in that situation.
Yeah. Bill,
I was thinking like we go to Sunshine Week. I think one of the problems I'm having was with the public records request. Is like, and maybe it's a question more for yourself. How do we ensure that when a board meets, that they discuss everything at the board meeting, on the minutes, and they're not meeting in private, maybe when there's one or two of them present to discuss things? Because I mean, I don't want to accuse him of anything, but I find it hard to believe that the airport commissioners are smart guys. I think they know exactly what airlines we're talking to. I think they know what's going on. How do we enforce that they meet as a group and they discuss stuff and they don't? You know, I mean, it just seems like, I don't know how you do that.
You've got to keep in mind, there are areas, and delegate business negotiations say they had a carrier that had expressed interest. I mean, you don't want to blow your cover. I mean, there's a reason. There's a good reason to keep stuff private for a while.
But that's when they should call an executive session at a board meeting. Correct?
Yeah, I think. And I should point out the thing about police records. And you would ask if it's getting better. I mean, that's still a very delicate topic, internal investigations. But yeah, it is better. I mean, I think you've got a more open, receptive police chief than his counter or his predecessors, and there's definite progress there. But I think more than, you know, specific laws to what we've got is good. I think now it's for all of us, public, media, all citizen bloggers, to be more demanding of those that are in positions of authority and you know, try to push that movement for more openness, more transparency in government. I mean, secrecy. Look at 9/11. If one agency had cooperated with another, provided the information they should have, we might have avoided it. The Unabomber, that horrible case three decades ago, wasn't solved until they finally put out in the media, you know, the scribbling meanderings of the suspect, until they finally went the publicity route, went open, and then his brother saw the stuff, recognized the symptoms and turned him in. The snipers that were arrested in Washington, they finally, so scared about that in public, you know, sentiment was at a height, everybody was nervous, they finally put out the one drawing they had of the guy, and he was arrested.
Mm-hmm. Just say one thing, well, I more than agree that some negotiations with airlines should be secretive, and I think I emphasize again, that's when you call an executive session within a board meeting. And as far as I can tell from the board minutes, there hasn't been an executive session. I stand to be corrected, but I don't think they have. Mm-hmm. So, how do we make sure that the boards are meeting and discussing stuff as a group? Is there a way?
Well,
any advice?
I think one thing is one thing that's changed in the last 20 years is that you have the internet now, so that you can post. I mean, you've been posting all week about, like, this seems very fishy to me.
Right.
I can't believe that it's actually working out this way, and you know, hundreds of people are seeing that.
Okay. And the internet, you pointed out the city's website, which is wonderful, and
it
does open up a whole bunch of many new doors, but then it, in the same way, and Patricia knows these cases of selectmen conducting business by email and complaints.
Are emails accessible public record?
That's a good question.
Well, emails by a quorum of members of a governmental body which relate to public business within their jurisdiction violate the open meeting law. And we have had several cases of violations of the open meeting law by email discussions by a quorum of members of boards.
So would I have a right, say, hypothetically, to, I guess this would be a public record request to say all the emails of the airport liaison the last 12,
Well, number one, governmental bodies should not be discussing public business by emails. A quorum of members of a board should not be. That would be, in an instance of a governmental body discussing public business, would be a violation of the open meeting law.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank all the panelists for joining us. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Sure. Thank you.
You know, and if not sooner, at least for the next Sunshine Week, definitely. It was a lot of work. I thank you all for working on this. Again, thanks to Kevin Cassen. I want to also acknowledge that we do have a city councilor here today in the audience, Gary Rosen. And there's a number of distinguished members here joining us as well in the audience. And I can't name any further because I don't want to leave somebody out and not be polite. So thank you for joining us. Go to wccatv.com/sunshine. Look for sunshineweek.org. And as always, I look forward to seeing you on the People's Channel. Thanks for watching. And remember, you are right to know.
Great job.
Thanks, man.
Good job. Thanks, man.